Right. Your prayer was beautiful, by the way. Your prayer was beautiful. Yes. Thank you. It's great. Thanks. Thanks, boys.
I can't see without these.
Oh. All right. My goodness. So, Ian, what was that thing you said a bunch of times? I didn't quite catch that. Was it everything's going to be all right? Oh, okay, good. Okay, so that's what we teach here. Everything's going to be all right. In fact, we teach that everything is all right, whether you know it or not. We get to be like that farmer in Bill Hadris's children's message. You know, wherever you go, there you are, right? Right? Okay, so today, because I thought it was 4th of July weekend, but I was just informed that it's not. It's what? It is? How many people think it's 4th of July weekend? Okay, how many people think it's not 4th of July weekend? All right, the answer is yes. Both weekends are 4th of July weekends. How's that? Okay. All right, so I had planned to talk about freedom, and I am kind of talking about freedom in my own quirky way. But first, I thought I would start with an Ernest Holmes quote. One of my favorite Ernest Holmes quotes about freedom is Ernest Holmes said, we are bound because we are first free. We are bound because we are first free. Ah, yes. Now, would we like to have a little audience participation? Would anybody like to tell us what that means? David Kerrigan. No, I'm going to pick on Susan Burrell because I'm picking on you later. Susan Burrell, what does that mean? Yes.
And we become bound by our thinking that circumstances control us.
Yeah, good. Good job. Yes. So for the recording, we are born free as the wind blows. We're born free, but we are become bound by our thinking. We have free will, and we often mistakenly use our free will to bind ourselves. Anybody ever do that? Yeah. Every time we worry, every time we fret, every time we plan for, you know, the worst case scenario, that is using our free will to bind ourselves. Every time we are seeking approval of somebody, that is using free will to bind ourselves. Okay? There's a whole list. Need I go on? No, probably not. We're constantly and relentlessly using our free will to bind ourselves. So we are bound because we are first free. But you know, I like to play with words. I like to flip things around. Ernest Holmes said we are bound because we are first free. But what if we are free because we are first bound? Ooh. I'm not going to ask anyone to explain that because this is very Bonnie mind, okay? What if when we come into this earth, we are bound to something so incredibly good and wonderful. We are bound to the love that created us. We are bound to the hidden treasure, the greatness that wants to express through us. And by virtue of the definition of wholeness, we are bound to one another because there is only one of us here and its name is Spirit. So not only are we bound because we are first free, we are free because we are first bound. To all of the love in the universe, to all of the grace in the universe, to all of the good that you can imagine, and all of the good beyond what you can imagine. That is what we are bound unto. Now, I know it's a religious science church, and people don't like to talk about being bound, because Ernest Holmes was all about freedom. But I have an image that's sticking with me that helps me understand this type of binding. I think many of you know that I was up in Northern California last week and I was visiting my friend Nipun Mehta, the source of that reading that Hugh did, and one of my great spiritual teachers, a spiritual mentor. And I was up there meeting a lot of people and doing a lot of work for the center. But on Saturday night, we had a night off, and this very serious man that I was staying with and a bunch of other people, he was in the group we were with, this very serious man, I asked him, "What are we doing tonight?" And he goes, "Well, I'm going square dancing." I said, "Are you kidding? I want to go square dancing." And so we did. I, you know, It's all about kindness. Unfortunately, there was this one girl who didn't want to go, and I kind of dragged her because I wouldn't have had a date had she not gone. So I forced her to come and dance with me. But it was awesome. It was so much fun to square dance. I haven't done it for 40 years. Does anybody here like square dancing? Raise your hand if you like. Yeah, it's so much fun. We should do a church square dance sometime, right? It was so much fun. Totally fun. So, but one of the most beautiful images in this square dancing, and this was, you know, I was with all of these visionary people, but this is something that really stuck with me. There was this woman who was dancing with a guy, or I think probably her husband, but she had this little chocolate lab that was following her around. So she would do, you know, Allemande left and all of that stuff, and do-si-do, and peel the banana, which is where two streams walk up like that, and then they go this way, they walk back, right? And the little dog was trotting along beside her for all of it. He was bound to her in love. He was dancing with love. Love was dancing with love. Love was becoming love, and love was becoming love. And that was such a beautiful image to me, just watching that dog and the love that it had. She wasn't doing anything to make him do it. He just was doing it because he was so devoted and so loving with his human companion. And I feel like that's the way we are with love or God or whatever it is you want to call it. We are so devoted. We are so devoted, and God is so devoted to us that we are constantly dancing with God in this square dance that we call the planet Earth. And sometimes we fall down. And sometimes we do-si when we mean to do. And sometimes, I don't know what, I can't make any more square dancing references, but sometimes it doesn't seem to work out, but God is always dancing beside us. We are always dancing beside God, and that is a constant. That is a constant. That is our life. So how do we live like that truth is true? Because it's wonderful for me to stand up here and say it and speak about it, but how do we actually live like that truth is true? Well, one of the things that that I did when I was up north with Nipun and friends was I went up there actually to gain some more education about how to lead the spiritual center. And because I feel that we're at a place where we're evolving into greater greatness, that we are joined with this spirit of love, and that it wants to express in a greater way. It's that something great wants to give. Well, maybe I won't do the give birth thing. Look at my body language already. Don't want to do give birth. Something great wants to descend or move through us and express in the world in a greater way. So I wanted to talk with Nipun and catch some of his ideas about that. And he asked me, well, what do you see? And I said, well, I intuit that we are becoming a center of even greater kindness, where there is this palpable grace in the room, in the rooms, where we are here to serve one another, and through our service and through our inner and through our outer transformation, we are transforming the world through the spiritual work that we do here. And he said, well, what's so difficult about that? And I said, well, two things, actually. One is that it's challenging to convince people that small acts actually matter, right? Anybody ever struggle with that? Right? Just dot. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's a shame. Okay. So it's hard to convince people that small acts actually matter. And then the other thing that is challenging is to witness the results of those small acts and to be able to see all of the interconnection that happens because of all of those small acts. So I'm going to talk about both of those things. Understanding that small acts matter, and also to witness the interconnections. I think it's the most important thing right now that's up for us as a center, building the center of grace and kindness and goodness and transformation. Okay, the small acts of kindness. Hugh covered this a bit in the reading, but I want to kind of go over it again. Why small acts of kindness instead of the big gesture that feels like it makes a huge change, that changes everything? Well, for one thing, small acts of kindness are doable and sustainable. You know, so often when we do the huge gesture, it wears us out, and then we don't do anything for a year or so. But small acts of kindness are definitely doable and definitely sustainable. And the thing about small acts of kindness is that you are probably doing them already, but not recognizing the power of them, or not having this little tiny conscious shift that is required to understand the power of them. You know, when I was at up north, one of the nights I stayed with Nipun's parents, which was super fun. They're the sweetest people in the world, and you know, his mother was just so incredibly welcoming, and I got out of bed in the morning, and she She tried to force feed me, you know how mothers do. You know, she wanted me to eat, have some more mangoes. Oh, I'm good. No, more mangoes, they'll go bad. Eat them, please, eat them, you know. And giving me clothes and, you know, just tons of saris and Indian dresses and telling me where to shop and all this stuff. And I just felt so nurtured and so sustained that when I got in my car, I was driving, and I had Google Maps on because I had to go to some place where I didn't know. I was driving all over Northern California, and every time the lady's voice came on Google Maps saying, take exit number 3, I was like, thank you. Thank you for helping me. So when we're in this consciousness of service and being served and feeling that it's a cycle and feeling that the inner and the outer are the one, right? That the ripples are rippling inward and the ripples are rippling outward, everything starts to feel like service and everything we do starts to feel like service. So if I fill up my gas tank with gas, I'm serving my car. I say, good car, thank you for getting me where I needed to be. So that's a place to start for all of us, is to recognize that what we are doing, everything that we're doing is actually service, but to name it that, to label it service, and to act as if that truth of service is true in all of our large and small actions, and then to do it relentlessly and to up-level it and to constantly look for opportunities to serve. Because the thing is that when we are approaching any situation saying, what can I give here versus what can I get here, that is, what can I give in this situation is incredibly empowering. Why is it empowering? Because we are no longer dependent on external conditions for our happiness. It was so coincidental. Bill and I did not plan the children's message, but the children's message was indeed about the external conditions are not responsible for our happiness. We are responsible. Our consciousness, our willingness, our receptivity to grace, all of that is responsible for our happiness. So if we are approaching every situation, whether it's buying hay for bunnies, oh my goodness, you have no idea how much research goes into getting hay for bunnies. You know, whether it's buying hay for bunny rabbits or serving prasad in the social hall back there or anything, just understanding that the grace that we experience in any situation comes from that place of saying, what can I give in this situation versus what's in it for me or what can I get from this situation? You got that? You gonna practice that? Really? All the time? Really? Okay, good. Good. I'm going to be checking up on you. No, I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. I have to practice it myself. I have to remember. I have to remember to practice that. Another thing about this business about the small acts is the idea that the movement of me to we, right? Hugh said we to me in one point. Was that a typo or was that you? That was you, okay, all right. So we're moving from me to we. Now, I know a lot of you have heard about the way our brains work, right? And we have these neural grooves, right? And much of our neural grooves are the normal pattern of our thoughts that create actual grooves in our brain. And so when we're born, I think for a while, again, I don't know anything about children really, so feel free to chime in, Mary Kerrigan, if you know what I'm, or somebody else who knows about children. But anyway, so if when we're born, we're kind of one with everything, blah, blah, blah. And then two, we start getting a little bit possessive and think that things are mine, right? And at some point, right, at some point, things become mine and not yours. And at some point, we become, and this perhaps stretches into adulthood. You remember the seagulls in Finding Nemo? Said, mine, 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 mine. Dogs do that too. Vishlas do that too, by the way. Yeah. You're eating something and they're going, mine, 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 mine. So our brains seem to be programmed to grasp, to things that things are mine versus ours. And if we can get out of that me-ness, oh God, into a we-ness, sorry. I'm pointing at Jeff because he taught me that word last Sunday. Oh, should I say it? Should I say it? Everybody find your weenus, okay? That's what you need to do. Yeah, it is. It's a part of your elbow, right? That's why it came up, because Jeff, I do this thing in church where I say, touch your elbow, and Jeff said, no, you should tell them to touch their weenus. I'm glad we understand each other. Yeah. Anyway, okay. No more of that. Anyway, so we move from the consciousness of me to we, and we start building those neural pathways of we, and then we becomes a natural state of being, so that when we enter into any situation, we're thinking about we. We're not thinking so much about me, we're thinking about we're thinking about us. What can we do? What can I do to support the greater whole? What can I do to, one thing you can do is stop making me laugh over there, girlfriend. What can I do to support this? And knowing that my support and my blessing ripples out and blesses the entire world, because it does. Okay, that's another thing that's really hard to get people to believe. If I were a fundamentalist preacher, I'd just say, believe me, please, believe me, Jesus. Jesus is a three-letter word. A three-syllable word, right? Jesus, right? Even the tiniest actions matter if they're done with the right spirit of consciousness and grace and love and service and skillfulness, bless you. You're welcome. Even the tiniest things matter if they're done from a standpoint of we versus me. Is anybody allergic to rabbits? There is that to consider. I kind of forgot that when we were planning this. This is how I know that this is true. You know, you start looking for it. You start looking for the ripple effect. You start looking for the inward ripples, which change our consciousness and change our neural grooves, but you also start looking for the outward ripples, and you start to believe in them, and when you believe it, you will see it. You know, when I was up there with Nipun and his friends, I met so many great people. I met somebody who had done a TED talk about, and she has this organization that's dedicated to creating peace in the Middle East, and somebody else who has made huge inroads in interfaith work, and someone else who is a renowned interfaith leader, and someone else, a monk, Reverend Heng Shur, who I've spoken about before, who did a very famous bowing pilgrimage where he did three steps and a bow, and not just a bow like this, but a full bow on the ground where he's poised on the ground. And he did that for 3 years, and I had tea with him. And I met all of these great people, all of these movers and shakers in the world of peacemaking, and all of these people that are seemingly doing huge things. And the thing that they had in common was that they did it one tiny step at a time. One tiny step at a time. And the other thing that stands out for me in that is that I'm not really speaking at length about any of them today. I would rather speak about somebody who did an act of kindness that doesn't even know that he did it. All of them inspired me, impressed me, but this guy made me cry because it was so beautiful. So this was at Karma Kitchen. Karma Kitchen is a pay-it-forward restaurant where you eat your food, it's all run by volunteers, and then at the end you get a bill, and the bill says zero. Somebody has paid for your meal. Your meal doesn't cost you anything, but would you like to pay it forward as a gift for someone else? And I've always wanted to work at a Karma Kitchen because I'd kind of like to do one here, but that's another story. We won't talk about that yet. What? I hear any volunteers? Whoa! All right. Sounds good. Okay. Anyway, I was working at the Karma Kitchen, and because I don't know much about Indian food, they put me in the back with the cooks and the dishwashers, and I was pouring drinks. Mango lassis, which are these mango sort of yogurty drinks, really good stuff. And I was making desserts. And they were telling me that, when you pour a drink, when you make a dessert, when you put a dessert on a plate, do it with a little bit of love. I have to say I did that some of the time, but some of the time I did it with a little bit of hostility. When people, like three waiters would come up to me at once and want different things and all of these complicated desserts, like, well, there's four different types of cheesecake and they want like just a fraction of each kind. I was like, are you kidding me? Think this is? Oh, food served with love, prasad, right? Yeah. But anyway, it was somebody's birthday. It was one of the dishwasher's birthday, and they had brought him this beautiful, huge cake with these candles on it. And because I was on desserts and drinks, I carried the cake out, and I We all sang happy birthday to him. He blew out the candles. We put the cake down, and everybody in the restaurant got a piece of cake. And I was serving the cake because I was on drinks and desserts, of course. And I knew about cake, kind of an expert in cake. So anyway, I was cutting the cake, and I was giving it to people, and I walked up to this one man who was sitting at a crowded table, and he was just an ordinary guy. He was probably in his early 70s. He kind of reminded me of one of my uncles. He was very thin, and he had a shirt that was buttoned up to here. He was Indian, and he was wearing like a Madras plaid shirt. And he was very quiet and soft-spoken. He had glasses and dark skin and was kind of wrinkled, and he had gray hair. Can you see him? I'm trying to make you see him. And I handed him the piece of cake, and he stood up, and he looked me in the eye, and he said, "It is an honor to be served by you." And I said, "No, it's an honor for me to serve you." And then I turned around and started crying. And I went up to this waitress, Abba, who was one of the cooks as well in India, and I was like, this man made me cry. And she's like, "What did he do to you?" I was like, no, you don't understand. It was so beautiful. It was making me cry. So the point is that this man is rippling right now. This man who had one sentence to say to me, "It is an honor to be served by you." I'm telling all of you about it. And I would love it, in honor of this man, for all of you to ripple in that way as well. So after the service, when you're getting prasad, when you're getting food made with love from Kathy, or when you're helping Kathy clean up, hint, 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 hint. if Kathy serves you, or if somebody serves you, or if somebody does something nice to you, say, "It is an honor to be served by you." If you serve somebody, say, "It is an honor to serve you." And you see what happens when you do that? You see what happens? It starts opening up the portals for grace. It starts changing your brain chemistry. It starts helping you realize that truly we are free because we are bound. We are bound to a grace that is inescapable. We can pretend to escape it, and we do all of the time. But it's such a simple gesture, such a simple gesture to simply say, "It is an honor to serve you. It is an honor to be served by you." I did it all day yesterday. I didn't always do it out loud. Sometimes people will, call the police if you do that kind of thing. But, every errand that I ran yesterday, and somebody, I was at the grocery store, and the person checked my groceries, and I just said silently to her, "It is an honor to be served to you." The guy bagging the groceries, those sweet young men, those high school boys that are, bagging groceries, "It is an honor to be served by you." All day long. And I have to say that I felt the power and the presence of grace upon me. So you see how available this is for you. You see how easy it is. And you see how in this community we can achieve this type of graceness, because we are already bound to it. But it takes coming together. It takes supporting one another. It takes shifting our consciousness, doing the work, finding those new neural pathways, immersing ourselves in service, recognizing that the service matters, that small acts matters, because they change us inwardly and they change the world outwardly, and then leading others, bringing that service home to our families, to our workplaces, leading by inner transformation. We can start today. When you go in there, when you name a bunny, when you sign up for the bunny care team, there's a bunny care team. If you sign up for it, we're going to find out who's on it and then figure out what it is. When you sign up to bring, when you sign up, it's easy, by the way. When you sign up for prasad, when you sign up for a class, when you sign up for anything, when you pick up a piece of paper off the floor, when you receive something, it is an honor to be served by you, or it is an honor to serve you. Would you turn to the person sitting next to you and say, "It is an honor to be served by you"? Good job. Good job, everybody, because just your being here is honoring and creates something magical. And I particularly enjoyed seeing all the teens roll their eyes in the balcony. That was really fun. Yay! So, in closing, I will just say this to all of you. What an honor it is to stand here in this pulpit and be served by you. You are amazing. I love each of you. Let us pray.